Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome everyone to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I am Nikki P here as always, and my guest today is Allie. How are you doing, Allie?
I'm okay. How are you?
I get to talk about books, so I'm doing fine.
Yay, books.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you came to doing what it is that you do?
Well, my name's Allie, like you said, and I have always just pretty much wanted to write ever since I was a kid. I started out writing little books that I taped together on Post-it notes, and I would sell them around my grandma's work. I'd crawl under her desk and I'd write these little books that were about silly things like butterflies who didn't want to be butterflies and, you know, silly fake families and stuff. And then I would sell them for like 25 cents so that I could get soda or whatever. But ever since then, that was what I always wanted. It's what comes naturally. I just kind of have to do it. I write in my sleep and I have to get up and write what I wrote in my sleep again. So that's kind of how it's gone from the very beginning. I think I was 7 when I started doing the little books, and it just never stopped. The first full book that I wrote was in 7th grade, where it was novel length, and it's terrible. And I wrote it about like my friends and I going back in time, but it made no sense. But, you know, as time went on, it obviously... I read more and I got better, so that's where I am now. Is I know what I'm good at, and it's not many things, but writing is one of those things.
Okay, that's funny. Now, you know, I need to feel like I really need to push my daughter. All these stories she's been writing about her and the cat going on adventures for years. Apparently, there is some hope for her yet to write something meaningful.
Oh yeah, of course.
So we talked a little bit about it before we started, but what type of books do you find yourself writing now? What is the type of content?
Right now, I write sci-fi and fantasy, but the two that are currently in the works actually is a horror comic and then a fantasy that's like a true high fantasy.
Okay, and so you're not just writing novels. Like you've definitely branched out beyond that. Like if you're writing comics, it sounds like too.
Yes, absolutely. And I edit comics as well. There's some other things that I'm doing with people that I can't talk about right now, but I mean, there's a lot going on.
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad that there's people out there, you know, finding the things to do, and you know, I guess at least not feeling like they're struggling to find their creative outlet.
Yeah, but I mean, I've got the first book was a poetry book that I published, and it's all self-published, and the second book was just this little novella, Wildman, that I sold and marketed everything by myself without a crowdfund or anything.
Okay.
And delivered and everything. A few hundred copies of this. And, you know, edited it all by myself. That's why it's got all the little things.
Okay.
Then 2 weeks ago, I published this, which is actually another kind of poetry book.
Okay.
It's a book of drawing prompts for kids, but they rhyme. So, you know, it's got like a space to draw, and then it has a little rhyme that gives them ideas of what they can draw.
I'm curious what type of age group that goes. That's for us. Like, I'm a homeschooling parent now.
Me too.
And I'm always looking for more stuff for my kid to do.
Yeah, me too. I love homeschool.
And I'd love that. Love to have something like that around. Like, so is it like a teen, like young, early kid? It's a fairly big blurb of text, so.
It could be 5 and up. for younger kids, it's definitely a thing that, like, a parent will have to do with them.
Okay.
But as it gets older, you know, any kid can do it. My daughter's 12, and she's not super interested in it, but...
That sounds like that age really changed.
Yeah, well, and she likes to write herself. She's not so much into following directions.
Okay.
But I was looking for drawing prompt books, and for kids, there aren't many, and they were all like, oh, draw a happy cat. You know, draw a funny alien. And I thought, that's not really, you know, a kid who is looking for inspiration isn't gonna know anything else to do. So they'll draw a smiley face cat and that'll be it. And then they'll discard this boring book. So I was like, I'll make one that's more fun. And I think I'm gonna do a whole series with like spooky ones and dinosaurs and stuff.
Well, I immediately am gravitating towards the spooky ones. I have to imagine there's probably plenty of a market for that now, considering like, my daughter's favorite, she's 9, and her favorite thing in the world is that Five Nights at Freddy's thing. So.
Yeah, kids really like that.
Well, it's weird, because, like, she's not really, I guess I think the reason she got into it is because I'm a horror person, and I think she thought that, like, if she was into something horror-y, I would engage more with her. I guess how she explains.
But you're not into it either.
Oh, no, no, I find it interesting. My big issue is, like, she's so obsessed with the lore in that particular game is just bonkers. Like, none of it makes any sense.
I don't know anything about it. My kid's trying to get into Final Fantasy right now.
Well, I wish my kid was getting into Final Fantasy. That would be great. But, okay, so while you like, just all over the map. I'm curious, like, what kind of time frame we're looking at here, like, that you've had all these releases?
The first poetry book was... in 2012.
Okay.
On July 4th, 2012. And then the next book was July of 2017.
So you like July for some reason.
I like Independence Day.
Okay.
Because I'm an independently published author.
Okay. And is that the way you've done everything so far? You haven't had like a straight publishing position or just do it yourself?
No, I sent out queries for years and years, but it's like a full-time job sending out queries because you have to find the people who want writers, and then you have to you can only apply to each one separately, and you have to find out which person is looking for which genre, and then they all want your stuff submitted differently.
Yeah, it reminds me of the college application process. Like, why can't I just send the same thing to all of you and then you get to do the deciding?
Yeah,
why am I filling out the same piece of paper 7,000 times?
And then I got rejections where it was like, wow, this is great. But, you know, unfortunately, we just stopped looking, you know, but then it started being, I would get rejections where they said, we love your work, but we're only looking to publish people of color. We're only looking to.
Just so you know, those people of color get the same stuff. I had a girl on my show and she produces fantasy novels and she writes a novel like, oh, well. This is all great, but, you know, we don't feel like your blackness in the story enough. And you're just like, what? I can't imagine anyone saying that to somebody. And that's like, it's a real rejection letter. Like,
that's insane.
Like, well, we're just really looking for more of the black experience in what we're trying to put out there.
And it's like, but I'm writing fiction. Like, what do you want?
Well, yeah, that was the thing. Like, I just want to write stories about fairies and pixies and trolls and shit. Like, that's what I'm into.
That's ridiculous. So yeah, I give up on querying when I started getting rejections based on that. And I just said, you know what? After COVID, my online store during COVID, my online store totally failed. So I'll just devote myself full time to writing. It's what I want to do anyway. So I'll do that.
Yeah. Well, and you're approaching it from an angle where, like, a lot of people lock themselves into kind of one thing, or like they're one trick ponies. I've got this one line that I'm doing. Whereas, I mean, you clearly have a lot of different things, a lot of different hats that you're wearing, and a lot of different ways to interest people with your writing, which is definitely, there's very few guests I have on that do that. It's usually they've kind of got their one thing.
I can write anything.
So, out of the stuff that like you have out there, and what is the thing that you're pushing right now to try and get people to, you know, open up to?
Well, I currently have a comic, the horror comic that is in demand.
Okay.
which means it funded. So basically, the horror comic is supposed to be reminiscent of, you know, vintage horror, like Creepshow. It's got a little bit of, you know, The Crow in it, Sin City.
EC Comics flair.
Yeah.
Oh, you're crossing a lot of bridges. That's a lot of different types of classic horror there. Sin City, The Crow, EC Comics.
Yeah. And it's about a baker who is, his family is killed and his bakery is destroyed and he's disfigured.
Okay.
And then he, so in his madness now, because he has nothing to lose, he starts creating weaponry out of his baking tools. And he goes on a killing spree to get revenge.
So we just crossed Dark Man and Sweeney Todd.
Yes! And I even call him the Demon Baker of Sweet Treats.
Okay. I'm curious what type of art style like that has. Because, I mean, it's impossible to look at that without having some type of comedic element to it, obviously. Like, it sounds silly, but...
It definitely is comedy. It's full of puns. And... You know, he had boiling donut oil poured over him, so his face is all melty.
Oh.
And so because of that, he can't, like, swallow correctly.
Okay.
So when you hear him coming, you just hear, because he's got to suck up the saliva, but.
And you haven't sold the script yet on this, because that sounds like so much fun to make.
It is super fun. And he uses, you know, those old fashioned, like, hand cranked egg beaters.
Yeah.
Yeah, he put a bunch of razor blades on that, and that's what he, like, uses.
Oh, good God. This has got, like a trauma vibe to it to me. Like, I'm...
Yes, absolutely. And what I wanted to do first was make it into a movie. So I bought Lloyd Kaufman's book and everything so that I could do it. But it turns out it's just too cost prohibitive.
Movie making is very costly. To even get into it requires too many people to help do anything. Like, it's not a not an easy thing to DIY by yourself.
Yeah, well, I spoke to Hart Fisher, who runs American Horrors and who did, you know, comics, indie comics, and got canceled for indie comics in the 90s. And he was the one who encouraged me to do it as a comic.
You get the visual side of it that you want for it, but, like, without all the added cost of, like, a full-fledged movie.
Well, I can't drive because I have epilepsy. So in addition to all the regular movie stuff, I'd have to figure out just basic transportation for myself. So
it was
just too much.
I mean, with an idea like that, come on, you don't have a driver already. This is a crime against humanity. It's terrible.
When I get that J.K. Rowling money.
So I'm curious, like, how big of a book is this? Is this, you have plans for it to be more than just a one shot? Is this going to be a thing that goes on? How's that look?
So the book is called Egg Beater because that is his, you know, killing name.
Yeah.
And it's a one shot. However, it's going to be part of a trilogy of two other tradesmen. I'm calling it the Tradesmen Trilogy. And
okay,
at the end, I'll have another comic where... And it'll go into an anthology where they all meet and fight. And it's the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker. And they're all going to, you know, meet the Undertaker, as it were.
Yeah.
Not the wrestling Undertaker, but, you know, you get it.
So I'm curious, like, what type of time period is this all set in? Because obviously you have allusions to, like, if... Number one, a baker, all of those people are, like, an old-timey kind of job, but, like, they're all things that do technically still exist, so I'm just curious.
I haven't specifically set a time frame, but I do have one of the, like, villains that he kills is a lady who is the head of her HOA, so that might date it a little bit, depending.
She deserves it, that's all I know.
Oh, for real, she does.
Head of an HOA, get rid of all of those people.
Yeah, she's trash. She's super trash. So I relish getting to see in print her, like, slowly cooking in the oven.
Oh, good Lord. I'm curious, like, you're in demand on this. How long until, like, the book actually comes out? Or does that mean that it is already out where people can get a copy of it? I'm still new to, like, the crowdfunding, like, how that all works. So sometimes the time frames are weird to me.
Well, in demand just means that it funded.
Okay.
And you can still purchase a tier.
Okay.
So right now, I'm looking at the artwork being done from my artist. I'm not doing the artwork around October, September.
Okay.
And then it's all hand drawn. So he's, you know, he'll ship me this huge thing. And then I'm doing the lettering.
Okay.
And I have a local printer because I don't like the thought of, you know, outsourcing to China or whatever.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really that much more expensive than the printers who, you know, are out of the country.
I mean, by the time you ship it on the boat, like, it's not usually that much cheaper because it's like, oh, I've got to get this over there. Like, why am I doing that then?
Yeah, exactly. And this way, I felt like I've had more control and it would foster more trust between me and my bakers. I call them my bakers, not my backers. Because I can just, you know, when they're printing, I can just go across town. And it's not even across town. I can just go 15 minutes away and see what's happening.
Well, and if there's a problem, you can get in the face of the person that you have the problem with. Like, hey, what's going on here? You don't have to, oh, I'm going to send an email that no one's ever going to read and they're never going to get back to me. Like,
any problems easily solved and I can watch it like in real time. So I thought that'll be better. And I'm contributing locally and all of, you know, that fun stuff.
So you said something that I immediately loved. You call them your bakers, not your backers.
Mm-hmm.
So you obviously put some thought into like the marketing aspects of what you're doing. Like that's not a decision that, like, yes, it's creative, but it's also like, I mean, that's branding. That is, how do I differentiate myself from every other, you know, person out there that's got another crowdfunded comic? Like, I love that.
Well, nobody else has anything like Egg Beater.
Yeah. To me, what it's real reminiscent of is, I talked to a lot of people. One of my things is the signal to noise ratio. And that was just such a simple way to, you know, jack up the signal and what you're doing and like make this very clearly your thing versus anything else. Like the idea of like, oh, well, my backers are bakers. Like you're immediately bringing them kind of into that world, making them part of it. And that's the thing that, in my opinion, in the marketing side of things, everyone struggles with within like the book and comic community is really making that human connection to bring the readers into the story from like before they've ever even picked up the story. Like they're engaging with what's going on. Are there other ways in which you do that?
Well, I have a tier that has an apron and it's got like the logo that is two like bloody rolling pins that are crossed.
Okay. For the record, I have people that I now want to just buy this stuff for Christmas. So you should be making good sales.
Nice.
Is there a specific demographic that you've approached with this? Because I mean, let's be honest, like this screams like, you know, 90s goth chick that now has, you know, a couple kids. Like it just was made for that the people.
So far, it's been mostly men.
Really?
Yeah. Because I'm going for comic readers.
Okay.
But within that, there, you know, are people who just don't care for horror comics.
Okay.
You know, much like the kid from The Lost Boys. I don't like horror comics. There are people who are like that. So I realize that it's niche, but I'm hoping that it also appeals to people who have the, you know, memory of stuff like Creepshow.
I mean, for me, like, it's just, I imagine, like, every Riot Girl wearing a freaking, you know, Jack Skellington shirt wanting a copy of this kind of thing. That's just the vision I have in my head. It's just, it feels like it meshes so well with that aesthetic. I guess, and for me, I think it's maybe that Sweeney Todd element, because I have had so many, like, people that qualify for that description I just gave you that were just obsessed when Sweeney Todd came out. Like, oh my God, you've got to get into this. It just has a vibe that meshes with that. But you're right, like, people, that's why I look at, like, Marvel and DC. Like, they want their audience to be something that it's not. The comic-buying audience is old white dudes. Like, that's what it is. And if you don't want them, that's fine. But there's no guarantees that anyone else is going to want to buy what you have. Like, you sell to who buys the comics, not who you wish they were.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Or you're going to lose billions of dollars and be standing there confused and wondering how it happened.
Wow. Either that or it was all a big plan to, you know, soak our entire economy. But I don't know. I'm not there making those decisions.
I'm no economologist.
So I'm curious, does it ever become a problem for you, and like as far as marketing goes, that you do so many different types of things? Like, do people think of you, oh, well, you're not a novelist, are you a comic book creator, are you a poet? Like, does it detract in any way to like not solidify yourself as any one of those things, or is, you know, a net positive that you've done all of those things and kind of, I'm just a writer. I do all kinds of different writing, and whatever floats my boat, that's what I'm going to do.
I don't think it's negatively impacted me because it's made it so a range of people have felt comfortable approaching me to say, you know, hey, will you write a Winnie the Pooh book? You know, will you write my sci-fi outer space thing? Will you write my my ancient Japanese thing? So I don't feel like it has negatively impacted me. And or even have you, will you write a song for me? I wrote a song for Black Flag, Dan Fraga's Black Flag with Will Perdomo. So I don't think it's negatively impacted me. Plus it has given people confidence in my editing capabilities, because if I can write in any genre, I can absolutely edit any genre, because I read every genre. I have a crazy amount of books because I just read everything. And that definitely, having the diversity, which is, you know, a word, but having that has definitely helped me and not hindered me, I think.
I'm going to be honest, that's the way I expected that question to go. But I got to ask it because, you know, you're always curious. Previous guest, Jacob Kelta, I mean, he's someone that goes out there and tries to do everything he can. Like, he's, you know, creating music that goes along with the worlds that he's writing about and, like, all of his short stories and stuff. And it's, for him, it's like any multimedia way that he can approach whatever he's doing, he's going to try it. If it's film, music, whatever.
I did make 2 songs, and I put them on a vinyl, a little 45 vinyl for Eggbeater.
What kind of music are they?
One is like a hip-hop song.
Okay.
And then the other one is more of a callback to traditional horror themes, like Tubular Bells, you know, from The Exorcist. And
okay. Some like Carpenter kind of stuff?
Yeah. You know, the Halloween theme, all of the horror themes everyone recognizes. I wanted one of those when I was still trying to make it into a movie. So I actually had a local kid make a song that's an instrumental based off this old Hungarian song that is known for, or there's a conspiracy around it that it causes people to commit suicide.
Okay.
And I thought that was cool. So I had him create that for my comic. So I've done a little bit of that too, but I've definitely stuck with, I can write anything, I can edit anything. I can do some other stuff too, like I've done voice acting, but the main thing is my writing.
Well, it's the thing you don't need anybody else to do, right?
Yeah.
You can always just dive in and, hey, beginning to end, I can make this happen.
I can write with other people too, it's just they're usually wrong.
More hurdles, if nothing else. Now, I'm going to be honest, I'm excited because I was not necessarily aware that you did horror stuff. And I, frankly, horror is actually my genre of choice. So it's always fun to talk to people that has any knowledge of horror. I'm curious, you know, are you into the written side of horror or the like film side of it more yourself?
That's a complicated question.
I think some people are better at both mediums, frankly.
Well, I mean, I'm into both, but for different reasons. So for horror film, I'm more into the technical aspect, effects, things like that. For books, I'm for like horror novels and horror comics, I'm pretty much into all of it except for Dracula. I hate that book. It's terrible.
It's something.
It's boring.
It's, yeah, I mean, by modern standards, certainly. Horror, because horror became something very different, certainly in the 80s and 90s.
I mean, I have old horror. You know, I love Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Frankenstein is legitimately terrifying, but it's also beautiful and well-written.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of similarities between Frankenstein or the new Prometheus and Dracula. there's a lot of really long, drawn-out descriptions of countryside, for example. And it's very boring in Dracula because it's technical.
Mm-hmm.
It's not boring in Frankenstein because it uses imagery and it's evocative.
No, I'll stand by that. I actually put off reading Dracula for a long time. It was within the past year, I think, I actually read it for the first time. And that was about my impressions of it. I mean, it's like, most of it's him talking to this woman about, like, her husband. Like, it's a lot of interviews, which is kind of like, that's weird. I thought this was about, like, a blood-sucking monster. And I think there's what maybe, like, a few chapters on the boat, which is, like, the only really horrific stuff in the book. And even that's, like...
Yeah, and the rest is, like, this weird pseudo-love story, and you're just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
That's fine. It's, like, that and the Renfield stuff. Is the interesting stuff.
I don't understand the whole Renfield thing. Like, that movie comes out and I'm like, I don't know why anyone cares to watch this. It's the least interesting character to me.
Oh, I love that movie. No. That movie's good.
Was it good?
It's so good.
I mean, I'm interested in it as a Nicolas Cage movie, and that's about as far as my interest went.
He did awesome. And honestly, it's about as close to a direct sequel to Bela Lugosi's Dracula as you can get. I was very impressed.
Okay.
It was really good. And the kid who plays Renfield was in Warm Bodies, which I also love. It's a really fun movie.
That's another one I've never gotten around to. Like, I remember it coming out, and I just never made it a point to check it out. I think Warm Bodies came out too close to, like, the peak of zombie movies. And I think I was like, I'm kind of tired of zombie movies right now. And it just...
Yeah. It's definitely more of a girly flick, because it's just Romeo and Juliet, but zombies.
Oh, I don't mind that, but...
I mean, the characters are even named Juliet and R.
Yeah.
So they don't, like, hide it.
I mean, one of my favorite episodes of Psych is Romeo and Juliet knockoff, so I've got no problems with that kind of stuff.
Oh my gosh, Psych is hilarious.
It's, like, my go-to, I'm waiting to go to sleep tonight from the show. I'm just going to put this on. I've watched these 300 times, and I don't care, because Sean and Gus are hilarious.
Mine for that is Hemlock Grove.
Oh my god. Like, I don't know anyone else has ever watched that show but me.
I have it on DVD. I love it so much because I wanted to cancel Netflix years ago.
My only beef was, I feel like that show, if it had kept with the core of what the show was about, would have been fantastic to keep going. The last season felt like it got really, really weird to me. And I'm like,
it was a little weird. I didn't buy that one.
The dragon stuff. I'm like, but those, like, it was the first two seasons or whatever it was, which, oh my God.
So good. I can't get enough.
I'm an RPG person. My RPG of choice has always been...
Vampire the Masquerade?
Well, just White Wolf's New World of Darkness in general.
Okay.
Like, that's kind of what I came into it on. And it just felt so much like they're taking those concepts. Like, the fact that, like, because... Twilight made the werewolf thing. They went with the Native American stuff, which is, you know, the skinwalkers, like, that idea, I get it. But the classic werewolf is always the Roman, you know, the Romanov. Like, it's that, the gypsy side of things. And the fact that they, like, went with that was, in that time period, was awesome for me.
Yeah, but she made up all the, Stephanie Meyer, she made up all her werewolf stuff. That's not even a real, like, Native American tribe.
Oh, no, I'm well aware of that.
Which was the safe way for her to go, really, because nobody can say, oh, you represented the Cherokee wrong or whatever.
Yeah, your lore is terrible here. What is it? You're screwing it all up.
Yeah, she's like, well, I made it up, so...
Right on. Well, is there any, like, key insights or things that you found that work or don't work as far as, like, helping spread the message of your books or yourself as a creator? Obviously, you have people recommending you... for shows and stuff, so clearly you have your audience and they're willing to put in the effort for you.
Yeah, I don't, who even did that? Thank you.
I couldn't even remember. Just someone's like, you gotta talk to Allie, she's great.
Well, thank you, person.
Well, I'm glad they did. Like I said, I get very few people on here that talk horror, and that's, it's always like, when I do find them, that's always fantastic, because it's a very niche thing, as you put it. It's not something most people are into.
Well, nobody can do horror right.
Like, my favorite author in the horror genre is Clive Barker. And the reason for that is he's such a good writer. Like, I love his prose.
I'm so glad that you said that and not Stephen King.
Stephen King was my introduction. Like, I read The Dark Half in fourth grade, and I enjoyed especially certainly his old stuff, but it never hit me like when I, you know, read The Hellbound Heart for the first time. And it's like, this guy is just operating at a different level. This is philosophy as much as it's, you know, horror. Like, he's going after real things in these characters.
Yeah, well, and my favorite is probably Dean Koontz. I think he's far superior to Stephen King.
I've read some Dean Koontz. I was not in love with some of the Dean Koontz I read, but I've also read Dean Koontz since, because like my dad had a lot of Dean Koontz, a lot of Stephen King books, and that's just kind of what I came off reading. And I think that my dad always went for the more suspense side of Dean Koontz.
Well, he's great at that.
It was like Twilight Eyes or something like that. It was one of the first things I think I ever read by him. I think that's what it was called. I haven't read it in 30 years, so.
A lot of his true horror is his short stories.
Okay.
Because he's got, and those are, I don't know why he doesn't do more of those. I think it's just because they don't sell as well. His suspense does really sell much better because he's so great at it.
Mm-hmm.
He has short stories. I have a whole book of his short stories called Strange Highways, and they're legitimately, like, terrifying.
Okay. I'll have to look up that one, as I would be more interested in him doing something along that lines. I think the last thing I've ever put into Dean Koontz was he had that film version of Odd Thomas starring Anton Yelchin. Was a pretty good movie.
Oh, I don't know. He's not the biggest fan of the film versions of his of his books. I read his book Demon Seed.
Okay.
Which had a weird version of it in the 80s or something.
Okay.
And he sits there and laments about how he's so disillusioned now from having his stuff made into movies because they can never do it right.
Well, you're always truncating, if nothing else. Like, you're never getting everything that's in the book because you had time constraints. And especially if you're watching movies in the 80s, like, everyone, they always talk about making a new Hellraiser movie. And I'm like, can't we just remake Hellraiser 2 with the technology we have today? Like, that's what I want to see. Just because that movie could have been so good, but because they chose to, like, try and use all the special effects at the time, it looks really dated and really bad. It's like, just fix that. Hellraiser 1 is perfect. Don't screw with that.
Well, they're creatively bankrupt, so they're going to try and redo everything with a sheen of CGI in the laziest way possible.
Absolutely. Is there anything that you think could help new creators out there, kind of point them in the right direction, or things to look for or say not do, out of curiosity?
The biggest thing for me personally that I have done and I have seen is being genuine is very important, because you're not just selling your book at this point. Especially if you're independent, you are selling yourself. And no matter what, your viewers and your readers are going to have a perception of who you are. And there's nothing you can do about that. And because they're looking through this little window, they're not going to see everything. But it's definitely going to help if you be genuinely yourself all the time. It's too much work to do a character for most people. And it's too hard to keep, you know, just like lies, you know, in real life, it's too hard eventually for people to keep up with it, which is why they always get caught in lies. So make it as easy flowing for yourself as possible, and just be genuine. Don't, you know, you'll get, because people can tell when you're not being yourself, and it's distasteful. Or worse, you become, you know, someone people make fun of and mock. And then you're not selling anything. You're just, you know, the subject of ridicule.
Well, I always love it when guests come on and then they agree with the stuff that I tell my listeners. So that's, I tell people, the reason I chose to be post-corporate marketers, because trust, 100%. You look at our companies around the world, like, no one trusts anybody. Look what George R. R. Martin has done to, like, the trust of readers for his own audience.
Well, because he doesn't ever publish anything.
Yeah, you know, hey, I'm going to make this big epic and I have an ending, but you know, I'll get around to writing it when I want to write it, even though I'm an 80-year-old man.
An obese 80-year-old man.
Well, I can't say anything about dude's weight. I'm not a spring chicken myself these days, but...
No, but it means that he's, you know, he's way more likely to just croak.
But, like, you're taking advantage of, you know, people that, hey, we trusted that you would finish this. And it's not like he even has kind of hinted that, like, you know, Robert Jordan, he had a guy handpicked to take over for him. Like, he's never even kind of hinted anything. It's like, oh, well, if I don't finish writing this, tough titties, guys. And that, to me, I think for readers, that comes off as, you know, just as unfeeling and corporate as anything Disney's ever done. It's just like, you're not giving us what's fair for us, the people that have supported you for this time.
Well, and why should I invest further?
Yeah. Well, I think I personally believe it's certainly trickled out to, like, that weighs on other authors now, like, because people, if, like, say you start a book, it's, people are less likely to buy number one of a trilogy until that trilogy is over with. Because, like, oh, how do I know this guy's ever going to finish it? George R. R. Martin never finished his. And, like, the fact that affects other authors is, you know, shitty.
It is shitty. But that's why I say being genuine is really important. Also, just making things easy for yourself. Because you can easily just get lost on social media trying to market yourself. Just do the stuff that comes naturally and easy. If that is having a big show and making a spectacle, then awesome, more power to you. But the conservation of energy is really important, and knowing where to delegate that energy. So, you know, if it's just a lot easier for you to once a day post a little update about what you're writing, and, you know, then that's awesome. But if you can easily put together a whole production, then do that. But ultimately, people will be able to tell, right, to see right through any contrivances that you present.
Yeah, you can tell a tryhard when you see a tryhard.
Yeah, and then people mock you. And, you know, they don't buy your stuff, and you're talked about, but it's not for the right reasons.
Yeah.
And then, and that leads into, don't do drama. Don't do it. Avoid it.
But what if we like drama?
Go participate, or not even participate. Go laugh at other people's drama, absolutely. But for the most part, paying customers, they don't appreciate it. Especially if you're nobody, you know, like me. It's not worth it to have these crazy dramatic things all the time.
Yeah.
Because it turns people off. Somebody who's already big, you know, EVS, Ethan Van Sciver, he can do drama because he's had an established fan base for decades that isn't going anywhere.
Well, once for me, signal to noise ratio, all that drama is just noise that's dissipating your signal, which is the thing that you want people to pay attention to you for.
Yeah, and then it's more work. And it's more work that's not writing. It's not creating. It's more work of,
yeah,
dodging and explaining and, I don't know, getting on a high horse or pontificating. And it's just too much. Like, why?
Focus on the writing. Focus on the word. Notice the grindstone.
Yeah. Do debates if you want, but not dramatic ones. Like, if that's what you want to do. Participate on panels, but honestly, dip out if there's drama. Because the more that you avoid drama, the more that your chat or your fans will actually do the drama for you. It's actually pretty intense how if you avoid that, the chat will more often than not step up to bat for you and just take care of any drama that just so happens to sort of be about you.
Mm-hmm.
And you can step back and then they'll figure it out. And then you just say, wow, thank you guys. Like, now I had more time to write my stuff for you. So I really appreciate that. And isn't drama dumb? And then people say, yes, it is. Thank you. And, you know, for people like you and me, we already have two full-time jobs, which is parenting and homeschool, on top of anything that we do online.
Yeah.
So that energy conservation is really important.
That's, I mean, I'll be honest, that's not an angle I've ever thought about on it. So I do appreciate the insight. Where can I send people to go pick up your stuff right now?
Everything, all my links and everything to check out are all on my website, which is sanguislibris.net, sanguislibris.net.
That will be in the show notes, folks. So if you're wondering, it'll be much easier to find that way. Well, I appreciate you for coming on today, Allie, so much. It was a different episode than I think I usually get to give other people, and I appreciate that. So You have a good one.
Hey, no problem. Thank you for having me on.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.